This program is pre-recorded.
Crystal clear coverage of the Patrick Madrid Show made possible in part by Charity Mobile.
Wait till they get a load of the Patrick Madrid Show.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that would be me. And I'm here to talk with you. If you'd like to give me a call, here's the number, 888-914-9149, sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Need a second opinion? You want to haggle? I'm ready to haggle with you, in a nice way, of course. But I can haggle if need be. 888-914-9149. Regardless, I'm here for you. If you want to send me an email, it's patrick@relevantradio.com. I'm still chuckling over that nice lady who's emailed me this morning and says, how can I email Patrick Madrid? You just did. A bunch of you have strong opinions about the what I thought was going to be not a throwaway topic, but sort of a quickie topic about people using their iPhones at Mass, but apparently that lit up people who want to comment on that. So a bunch of you already have. Here's another one. This is from Tim. It says, during COVID, I started using the Relevant Radio app to read prayers before and after Mass. There are great prayers on the app, such as the St. Ambrose prayer before Mass and the Anima Christi and Padre Pio prayers after Mass. My son has special needs, and the app helps him to read these prayers before and after Mass. No one ever asked me to put down my phone. I enjoy your show. Well, that's kind of you, Tim, and I'm glad to hear that nobody bothered you about it. If those of you listening didn't hear the first hour, it just started with a comment that I saw, was it Reddit or Twitter, one of the two, of somebody saying that he saw somebody using a phone during Mass, and he went over to him and tapped him on the shoulder and told, and actually he handed him a copy of the Missalette and said, you can follow along on this. And the guy said, mind your own business. And he said, well, you're distracting me by using your phone at Mass. And the guy said, well, then move. And that was the long and the short of it. And so we talked a little bit about that in the first hour. That's what Tim is referring to. Just to recap, I think we've moved into a time now where, even though that's not common, I don't really remember seeing it much at all myself, but you're probably going to see more of that. We had a caller say that because he's hard of hearing, he uses his phone and occasionally has to adjust it on the fly during Mass, but he uses his phone so the Bluetooth to his hearing aids can allow him to hear what's going on. That's a valid reason, don't you think? A couple of people said during COVID, just like Tim said, during COVID, the missalettes were taken out, so use the phone to follow along. That's a valid reason. And I've seen people who, when they want to do the readings and follow along, if they need to zoom out on the screen. Cyrus, you ever do that when you're holding a piece of paper that's got a picture on it, and just instinctively, without thinking about it, you try to zoom out on a piece of paper? Have you ever done that? I've done that.
No, but I've seen little kids do it, like 3- and 4-year-olds.
They have a
magazine.
Are you saying I'm childlike?
I'm not saying that. You're making some connections.
Am I? Okay. I've done it. I've just unconsciously, try to zoom and I think, oh, wait a minute, this is a newspaper. I can't.
If anyone has that on video, please send it to patrick@relevantradio.com. I want to see this.
If it's there, I'll send it to you. So people, they're lining up. I think most of the people are saying this is benign. It's not a big deal. So we also have a note that came in from Marie listening in Rhode Island. She says, I do use the Missalette during Mass. The priest prayers are praise beautiful prayers throughout the Mass that are different every day. And seeing these in print helps me to appreciate these prayers and participate by praying along with him in my mind. When I go to daily Mass at a different church on my lunch hour, I frequently use my cell phone to follow along and to recite the entrance and communion antiphons. The missals that are used at this church are large, hardbound books, not easy for me to navigate smoothly because different parts of the Mass are in different sections of the missal. That's true. I find using those missals distracting, so I use my phone. I do try to be unobtrusive about this because I don't want to distract anyone, but it is very important to me to fully participate in the Mass. I think that's great. Whatever works well for you to participate as well as possible in the Mass, I think is a good thing. If it is a distraction to other people, somebody suggested earlier, and I thank you for your email, Marie. Somebody suggested earlier that maybe the people who are going to use the, who are going to use the, what do you call, the phones, they could sit in the back of the church. But that has odd connotations, doesn't it? The back of the bus, you got to sit back there. So that's an odd connotation that I don't think is going to be helpful in this context. But as a practical matter, if you're going to be using your phone to follow along at Mass. Now, if you're using your phone to do other things other than Mass, then turn your phone off and put it away. But if you're legitimately using it to follow at Mass, read the readings, what have you, try to do it. My advice would be try to do it in an unobtrusive way. And on the other side of the coin, if you're distracted by somebody who's using a phone at Mass, you can always move. Sometimes that's the best and easiest thing to do. Swallow your pride. I mean, in a way, it's kind of like, it's different, but kind of like, you ever see this at Mass, the guy or the, it can be a man or a woman, sitting at the end of the pew, right where the pew, you know, ends, and you can get out right into the aisle. And somebody comes along, wants to sit in that pew, and the person will not budge. They force the other people to walk over them, to step over them, to get... You know, the right thing to do most of the time, unless you have a disability or you need to get to the bathroom quickly, perhaps, is some extenuating circumstance. Outside of something like that, if you're able-bodied, the polite thing to do is you just slide in toward the center of the pew.
Oh.
Yeah. But, you know, that's something that I find distracting. I'm just being honest here. If I see somebody sitting at the end of the pew and they will not move, so that somebody or a family can get into the pew. I find it distracting. We're all human. We're all human. So maybe trying to look out for the other person and be unobtrusive yourself can be a good thing. So when you, Cyrus, easy, big fella. He's had too many tacos so far today. When you find yourself distracted by something, at least in my experience, the best thing to do is move to a different area, if possible, so that you're not distracted. This last one comes in from Jan. She's listening in San Diego. As a bit of a germaphobe, I like to have a personal missal, and therefore I subscribe to a prayer and worship guide published, and I'm not familiar with the group. It covers 5 or 6 weeks of Sunday readings. References the daily readings, includes the order of the Mass. It's a great tool that allows me to easily access the readings prior to Mass at home. It's also easy to carry in and out of the church. Okay, well, there's another example. Someone is a germaphobe. That could be, you know, I mean, you're not going to get a disease from picking up the missalette in the pew. You're just not. So I realize this, for some people it's uncomfortable, fair enough. But that can be another reason right there. 888-914-9149. Why don't we go now to Joe in Minneapolis. Good morning, Joe.
Hello, my friend Patrick. How are you?
I am well, Joe. Thank you.
Good. I won't give a lot of details, so like if a young person to this. So I've been recovering from alcoholism for quite a long time, 40-some years. So I go to meetings and I help with an orientation, which kind of tells people how to look at the problem and how to stop. And anyways, there's a young lady in there yesterday. It's a really sad situation. Maybe you understand this more, but she maybe has some, I don't know, I'm not really good at things, but some issues, maybe that's mutually. Anyway, she brought up about her demons that haunt her, which when I put the orientation on, I put a little bit of towards God, towards Jesus, towards my Catholic faith. I like to talk about the box, going to the box. But anyways, so she was sharing that, and then she was talking about harming herself. And I think most people would understand that, like with, you know, harming herself. And then
So you were talking to her after Mass, or what happened?
No, it wasn't Mass. It was after a meeting. And then after the meeting, I ended up, when everybody left, I just asked her if she was a Christian. And I said, you know, I told her, I said, you try to bring the name of Jesus into when that's tough. You have to pray more. But so, you know, anyone, so 2 points. One is, I'm kind of curious if you understand all that harming themselves. And the second is, if anybody is in recovery, try not to hide from your Catholic faith. You can kind of do it neutrally, but people need something. And anyway, so that's all I have, and blessings to you, and thank you.
You're welcome, Joe. Thank you, and thanks for trying to be a light in the darkness for that young girl, that young woman. I hope it's helpful to her. Thanks, Joe. Let's a few more emails have run. People have strong opinions about the cell phone thing. It's interesting to me. So Monica in Las Vegas, she just wrote in and said, regarding the cell phone topic, use your phone if you need to, but please turn off the ringer. It never fails, even after an announcement, to turn them off. Some phones will ring during Mass. Very rude and distracting. I agree with that. It is rude and distracting. And it's a simple thing. Just put it on airplane mode or something like that. Thanks for that. Aussie in Los Angeles says the iPhone has an app for the missal. Sometimes the priest or the person reading the readings can't be understood. Not all churches have a missal in the pews. Well, okay, fair enough. But I would say 99.99999% of churches have the missalettes in the pews. I can't remember being in a Catholic church and didn't have them. So that would be sort of a one in a million thing. But fair enough on that, Aussie. Thank you. And lastly, for the moment anyway, Daniel in Los Angeles, he says, I've used my phone at Mass for the USCCB daily readings, usually because some of the lectors and priests have heavy accents. Unfortunately, the availability of the device leaves open the opportunity to use it for other reasons also. I have been guilty of this. That's a true confession. Sometimes the best option is to leave it in the car. Happy Taco Tuesday. Well, you know what? If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. I've heard those words before. So that's a good point, Daniel. If you're using the phone for a legitimate purpose at Mass, even though it's kind of newfangled and something most people probably haven't seen before, if you find yourself drifting to look at stuff that's not pertinent to Mass, which would be anything, then I think you're right. Just turn it off and leave it in the car. And the missalette is there to be used, so it's not as though people are bereft of any way of seeing what's going on at Mass. But that's a good point. Thanks for that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Alfred now in Boise, Idaho. I think we spoke yesterday, Alfred, if I'm not mistaken. Hello, Alfred.
Hi.
Okay.
You did. I'm going to have a lot more questions. Thank you, Patrick, first of all. But there's a big thing here. I go to a recovery group for past things like the depression and sexual integrity. Some people are there for alcoholism, drugs, but we're all different. We're either believers or we're not believers, but we're not all Catholic. Here's the thing. We all confess to each other. And to some of these believers, that's the way that ancient Christians used to confess in public.
I'm familiar with that. They would also, maybe even more common than that, was their penance that was given them by the priest in the sacrament would be performed, often performed publicly, and people wouldn't be able to figure out what your sin was. So one example of that, as long as you brought it up, is for serious sins like fornication or adultery or things like that, you might be prohibited from receiving Holy Communion for years, a year, 3 years, 5 years. And you would also have to sit in the very back of the church. Talk about back of the bus, but that was part of the penance, is that the sinners who were doing penance for terrible sins would have to sit in a group at the very back of the church. And everybody knew if you were back there, they knew why you were back there. It wasn't hard to figure out.
Yes. Yes. And I actually profess that I'm Catholic, and I don't want to proselytize. It's a headache for me. But I'm a Catholic, believing Catholic. I believe in the Eucharist. I believe in confession. But I also share that I go to a priest for absolution. That's the most as I can do for them without them getting a headache from me about it. I'm not going to pound it in their heads. But my thing is, I wasn't even going to say that part. Well, to me, why did we need to give the church a name? Because I know that the early believers just, I guess they assumed everybody who was Christian just believed in the Assumption, believed in the Eucharist. and we have to, and I know we had to put it into dogma because people were not united in belief, but I'm trying to dig deep. Why did we?
Are you wondering why? Are you? Yeah, you're wondering why the name Catholic took hold?
Yes. Yeah, I know it means universal, but yes, why did it take hold? Yes, thank you.
Okay. Well, it was a way to distinguish the authentic church and the authentic gospel from those who, in some way or another, distorted it or denied it. So I'll give you an example. You can read all about this in the book of Acts, also in St. Paul's epistle to the Galatians. There was a division in the church early on. It had to do with whether or not a convert to the church, a Gentile convert, and a man in particular, would have to be circumcised in order to be baptized. The question basically was, do you have to be Jewish in order to be Christian? And there was a cadre of people who said, yes, in order to be a Christian, in order to be a follower of Jesus, you have to be circumcised if you're a man. And you have to keep kosher. You have to follow the ceremonial laws of the law of Moses. And so that was a real sticking point, and it became more and more pronounced over time. And so they developed a term for that group called the Judaizers. So there's an example, although it's not referring to the church per se, it's a way of describing a particular subgroup that was causing problems and promoting a misunderstanding. And so if you were said to be among the Judaizers, then that was a way of, in essence, excluding you and saying that you're believing in something that's not true. Another example we see in Acts chapter 20, and this, by the way, is in verse 29, is where we're told, I know that after my departure, fierce wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And this is an echo of what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 17, verse 15. He says, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but are inwardly ravenous wolves. So one of the phenomena in the early church, sad to say, was that heresy would pop up fairly regularly, whether it was the Judaizing heresy or some other heresy. And so as a practical thing, it became helpful to say, well, what kind of Christian are you? What do you believe exactly? And so by the end of the first century, beginning of the second century, we can see this, for example, in the writings of St. Ignatius of Antioch, who knew the Apostle John, and it seems as though he knew the Apostle Peter as well. He didn't coin the term Catholic Church, but he used the term Catholic Church in his writings. It seems from the internal evidence that this was a term already in wide circulation to refer to the church as the Catholic Church. So he died in the year 107, to give you a sense of time here. And it seems to have already been in wide circulation because not only does he use it in a matter-of-fact way, but nobody questions it. Nobody says, the what church? What church is that? The Catholic Church? Never heard of it. So even just from that bit of evidence, we can see that it was a term that was used. And I'll conclude my thought by saying this is an example of where the church would take practical steps to make sure people were really clear about what church they're talking to. Now, several centuries later, at the time of St. Augustine, and he was born in the year 354, so he talks about, and this is in his letter to Petilianus, you can look it up and read it for yourself, but he's responding to a guy in that time, Petilianus, who styled himself a quote-unquote Catholic, even though he wasn't a Catholic. He said, you know, we're really the Catholics. I forget now whether Petilianus was a Donatist. I think he might have been. And so St. Augustine, in his response to Petilianus, he says, you know, you claim this word Catholic for yourself, but surely you recognize that if anyone were to go into any town or any city and say, where is the Catholic Church in this town? Nobody's going to point him to your church. They will point him to the Catholic Church because the word Catholic is associated with the specific doctrines of Jesus and the apostles. They're not going to point you to some other group. This is, by the way, this is in some circles still a problem. There's some people, Calvinists, Lutherans, and others, some of them anyway, who really do believe that they are part of the quote-unquote Catholic Church in a small C sense, and they are nothing of the sort. They have this romantic notion that the ancient quote-unquote Catholic Church is something that they are heirs to, and they're not, because they deny key aspects of the gospel. And so this has been a problem from the very beginning, and kind of circling back to your original question, that's why the term began to be used as a way to signify specifically which version of Christianity are we talking about here happens to be the original. And all others would fall into one or another category of heresy.
Yes.
So
yes,
there's my answer, Alfred.
Very, very good. Yeah, yeah. I know you're hooked for time, but I heard also that the even the word Christian was a rude remark to the first
Christians. It was a put down. We have to take a break. To say a Christian in the earliest days was like to say Christer, or you follow this guy. It was a put down. It was an epithet. And so it was a term of derision to be called a Christian. But the Christians recognized, no, this is not a term to be ashamed of. This is our glory, that we are followers of Jesus Christ. So they adopted heartily, happily, the term Christian. Thanks, Alfred. Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. Info at charitymobile.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Oh, give me the beef, boys, and my tacos. I want some hot sauce and my burritos and stuff my face.
I haven't heard this one before.
I want some hot sauce in my burritos and stuff my face.
You've been working overtime, Cyrus.
Yeah. Just trying to keep you happy.
It's good. It's good. I like that. Where'd you find that?
It's a keeper, huh?
I'd say so. I was never a fan of the original song, but...
But, well, this one has meaningful lyrics.
It does. Well, on a Taco Tuesday, it sure does.
Right.
That's for sure. Well, that's cool. Yeah, thank you. You're putting in overtime. I like it. You're a company man. Not in the Glengarry Glen Ross sense, though. Different kind of company man. That's right. We do it in Mexico.
We do it in Mexico all the time.
All the time. 888, I'm getting hungry. 888-914-9149. That number is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Call that number now. We'll get you on the air. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Roberto in Albuquerque. Good morning, Roberto.
Morning, Patrick. Hey, first time caller.
Well, welcome. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Oh, I've been listening for 10 years or so. I've learned so much.
Thank you.
And if you could help me explain, with Pentecost coming up, if you could help me explain to anybody who may happen to ask me how we get the 9 days for our 9-day novena devotion.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I will share something with you that I wrote a while back, quite a while back, that will elaborate on this issue. But the simple, quick answer is this is from the Latin word for nine. So when you say a novena, it's because, at least traditionally, it would be a prayer that you would pray over the course of 9 days. So that's the reason it's called a novena. So if you have a couple of minutes, I'll share with you a succinct explanation that will give you everything you want to know about novenas.
Yes, yes, please.
Okay. And where you can get this, by the way, is on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on links, click on articles, and you'll find this little article there. It's called Our Novenas No-Nos. Again, go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, click on links, click on articles, and this one is there. And all the other articles, 2 or 3 dozen more articles, are all free. You can download them, save them, text them, whatever you want. So here goes. Novenas have a long history in Catholic spirituality, but recently the practice of this venerable and beautiful custom has fallen into decline. These days, many Catholics are hazy on what novenas are and what they're for. Some wonder if they are dangerously close to superstition. Let's determine first what a novena is. It is a term, quoting here from the Catholic Almanac, it's a term designated designating public or private devotional practices over a period of 9 consecutive days or 9 weeks, in which a day each week is set aside for these devotions. The word novena comes from that Latin word I mentioned earlier, novum, or I alluded to it, meaning 9. Each particular novena to angels or saints or Our Lady has its own special prayers. Strictly speaking, a novena lasts 9 days or 9 weeks. The term, though, can be rightly applied to any interval of prayer, whether longer or shorter. For example, Jesus made a 40-day novena, quote-unquote, in the desert by fasting and praying in preparation for his public ministry. A biblical example of a novena is found in Acts chapter 1, verses 13 through 14. In Acts chapter 2, verse 1, we're told the apostles, the Blessed Virgin Mary, and other holy women gathered in Jerusalem and spent 9 days between the ascension of our Lord and Pentecost in intense prayer and contemplation. So that's where we see a novena, 9 days of prayer. This first and greatest New Testament novena culminated on Pentecost with the descent of the Holy Spirit. In Acts 9, verse 9, St. Paul made a post-conversion mini-novena of 3 days at the home of Ananias. The Old Testament invests certain numbers, such as 3, 7, 12, and 40, with symbolic meaning. The ninth hour figures prominently in the New Testament. Jesus died at the ninth hour, Matthew 27 and Mark chapter 15. And the apostles frequently gathered to pray in the temple at the ninth hour. Evidence that prayer novenas were practiced in the early church is included in St. Augustine's caution against novenas, oddly enough, for fear that some would be scandalized in thinking that Christians were mimicking pagans. The historian Durandus, in his Rationale, says that some did not approve this, meaning novenas, in order to avoid the appearance of aping pagan customs. However, many Christian writers defend novenas, in arguing that the mere potential for superstitious abuse and passing similarity to a pagan practice doesn't mitigate the salutary effects of praying novenas. And I'll add here, the fact is, we see in the Bible Our Lady and the Apostles praying a novena for 9 days. In the Middle Ages, novenas were very common. This included the recitation of prayers on each of the 9 days before Christmas in honor of the 9 months that the Lord spent in the womb of the Blessed Virgin Mary. It flourished in places like Spain and France as early as the 7th century. And it was in the 17th century that the pre-Christmas novena began to catch on in other parts of the world as well. Let's see. There's a bit more. I won't get into those things specifically, but that'll give you, from a biblical standpoint, you can see that the idea of praying a novena has long-standing history going back to the time of Christ and the apostles. So I hope that answers your question, Roberto. And as I say, this article and all the other articles that I have here for you are all free, and they're all available as PDF documents. You can save it, print it out, text it, what have you. Just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and then click on links and then click on articles. Let's go now to Orlando in Texas. Good morning, Orlando.
Good morning, Patrick. The reason I'm calling is because I really need advice. I'm kind of confused and a decision I need to make. I work for myself. I'm a self-employed for the last 9 years.
Okay.
And economically, it hasn't been good for me, myself. I'm the only one who's working at the house. I have 2 sons, 18 and 19.
Are you married?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
I am.
So a wife and 2 sons. Okay.
And you know, since all the time, since I work outside, you know, these up and downs, you know, bad situations sometimes economically where you know, I'm kind of getting frustrated to this point and see what else I can do.
Okay.
I've been looking for, thinking about getting another job right here in town. But I mean, since what I know that I've been doing it, you know, just painting, is not offering me too much a job that I can support my family.
Okay.
And I'm getting a lot of frustrations and anger because, I mean, I want to grow, you know, to be established economically, but it's being hard.
Okay. And, are you looking for some advice?
Yes, my brother, yes, some advice. My brother has been talking to me that he has some friends that work in the oil fields, you know, trucking, but it's outside a city where I believe there's no church for me to go on Sundays. Okay. And he says that I need to go stay there, you know, be out the house for 2 weeks, the 7 days, you know, and I can rest a week and come back home. And
so are you wondering about missing Mass on Sunday?
Yeah, missing Mass on Sundays. And I never been out of my family that long, you know, and...
Let me give you a suggestion. If I may, is there more to it or can I jump in now?
Just a little bit more. And the money is good. It's very good. But okay. I feel in my heart that I don't want to make it like, I want to go get money and leave my God outside my faith. I don't want to do it. It's not what I want to do. But I really need, you know, to get money for me to...
for your family, yeah.
For my family. And right. He says it's pretty good money, and it is pretty good money. And I just want to do it for a couple of months until I get a good chunk of money and come back and, you know, try to stay here locally working. But okay. I don't know if I'm doing the right thing, if it's sense, because I'm going to work, you know. I don't know if I can express myself the way you can understand.
Yeah, no, I understand you just fine. So here's some thoughts. Number one, I can readily imagine the predicament that you're in. You need a better job. You need to bring in more money. I'm guessing if you're working outside a lot, it's also affected by weather. So you don't want to be working outside in the rain or the thunderstorms. So I can understand that. And you want to do right by your family. That's good. So one thing that came to my mind as you're describing this is, and let's put the other job on hold for a second here. One of our national sponsors is the Catholic Order of Foresters. It's a life insurance company, and it's for Catholics. It's a Catholic company. It's for Catholics, and they're all around the country, and they're always hiring. So if you have a pen handy, jot this down. It's called Catholic Forester. So okay. Catholic, Forester, CatholicForester.org. And you'll see when you go there, they have a section on employment opportunities. There are men and women who work for Catholic Order Foresters who, this is how they support their families. They make enough money. They make, in some cases, plenty of money or a lot of money even. And so it can be a very successful career. And they're always hiring and they're looking for Catholics. Now, I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for them. But I wouldn't be surprised if, especially with somebody like yourself with your native Spanish-speaking skills, might be a huge success in sharing these products with people who speak Spanish, you know, because you're from the community and they know you. So you might want to take a look at that and have a look, because that would enable you to work from home. That would prevent you from having to go out in the weather, you know, and the hot sun and all that. And it could be the solution that you're looking for. And that way you'd never have to worry about missing Mass on Sunday, you know. Now, I'm going to put that on hold now and just say, check it out, Catholic Order of Foresters. As far as this other job is concerned, if you're going to be in some remote area, if you do this other job, driving the truck, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so... You can do one of a couple things. One is that you can ask your pastor at your parish for a dispensation from the obligation to go to Mass on Sunday because of this extenuating circumstance. He can grant you a dispensation. And it would have to be for a good reason, but I think this would be a good reason, that if you're prevented from being able to go to Mass on Sunday because it's so remote and there's no church, and because this is what you need to do to feed your family, there is an extenuating circumstance there. So you could ask for a dispensation. But what I would recommend would be maybe investigate whether or not it's Catholic Order of Foresters, but investigate a couple of other options before you take that step, because it could be the solution to the problem that you're looking for. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, because I don't want to you know, miss Sundays. To me, is very important for my faith and for my soul.
Right.
You know.
Right. That's how it should be.
And I want to, yes, and I want to show my kids that it's important to go on the weekend, on Sundays, to church. And if I'm away, don't feel like kind of uncomfortable. But I mean, I don't have no other choice, you know, to make that decision and make that kind of money, you know, more faster than I thought, and just to be outside for a couple of months. But there's another choice, like you're telling me, Catholic Forest, that's another choice, a route I can go. But this is something that I need to take a decision really, really soon. Mm-hmm. And this is what is getting me more anxious.
How much time would it, so let's say you decided to switch over to this other job, driving the truck. How much time would you need to do that job before you could, you know, get a different job or another job, better job?
My brother is waiting me for the answer. All he's waiting and the other.
No. What I mean is not how long until you have to decide. If you did it, how long would you do it?
Ah, okay. Probably 4 or 5 months.
Okay. You'd have to miss mass.
I don't stand there for a long time. You know, it just just to go and get you know, make some money faster because it's a good pay, and then come back and, you know, stay here with my family, local. You know.
Right. Well, I'll give you one other thing to chew on here. There's, I'm really happy that you want to put God first, and that's the right way to do it. Put God first. There are men who have to go fight in a war, or they go on a nuclear submarine in the Navy. And there are some things that are job-related that they just have to do to feed their families, and it means that they're not able to get to Mass on Sunday. So your Sunday obligation is, if you can get to Mass, it's within your power, and you're supposed to go to Mass. But if it's beyond your ability to go to Mass, health, job, war, what have you, then you don't have that obligation. And in this case, I think the case could be made that you have a pressing need to bring in more money so that you can, you know, pay your mortgage, buy groceries, take care of your wife and children. You have to do that. So it's a necessity, something beyond your control. God will understand that. Now, I didn't talk to you, and I have to take a break, so I'll just leave you with this thought. I think you mentioned your sons are like 17 and 19 or 18 and 20 or something like that. They should be contributing. If it means hardship for the family that you would have to go away for 4 or 5 months and drive a truck and miss Mass and all that, I would talk with them and say, you guys should be contributing to the family budget. I know it's not ideal, but you know, we need your help. So if each of you can kick in a few $100 a month or whatever it may be, that could solve the problem too. So they should be men enough, old enough as men, to be able to kick in and help the family budget. So that's another avenue that you can check out with them. Thanks, Orlando, and I'm glad you brought this topic up. I'm sure you're not the only one wrestling with this. Check out Catholic Order of Foresters. It's catholicforester.org. Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. Info at charitymobile.com. Happy Taco Tuesday.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Okay, I have a note here from Jenny. And she says, I attended a Mass at a parish. And when I tried to receive Holy Communion on the tongue, the priest pushed it away and made me take communion in my hand. I don't know what it is that he pushed away, but I'm not sure what that means, but that's sad. She says, I was upset about this and would like to know, how can this happen? I'll be attending that parish again for Mass, and I'm not sure how to handle this if I get the same priest who would do that again. Thank you for your advice on this. Well, let's put it this way. First of all, it's a terrible shame that some priests will impose their own idiosyncrasies on you. You're just there to worship Jesus. You're just there to receive Holy Communion. It's not his place to shame you in public or to force his wish to see people receive Holy Communion in the hand on anybody. He shouldn't do that, and it's a shame that he's doing that. And ultimately, he'll have to answer to God for it. In the meantime, if I were you, I would just avoid that parish. It doesn't sound like it's your parish, so I would just say, obviously, if he's acting out in that way, it's too bad. He shouldn't do that, but you have the choice of going somewhere else. So that way, you're not going to be shamed in public. You're not going to be put upon by that, and you can go to Mass in peace and love Jesus, and everything will be fine. So it's not ideal, but sometimes we can't choose the ideal scenario, but that's what I would recommend. Thank you. Let's go to Karen now in Dana Point, California. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. My question is about if there's any obligation to be plugged into a parish in the diocese for which you live. My husband and I are struggling where we live. Our pastor omits part of the Nicene Creed. We talked
for
about
us men and for our salvation, he came down from heaven. I knew it. I saw that a mile away.
Okay. Yeah, and so we addressed it with him prayerfully a couple years ago, and to his credit, he did stop omitting it for a while. We then moved to San Diego for about 18 months, got involved in a reverent church down there, loved it. Now we've moved back, and unfortunately, he's omitting it again, and we're really struggling. We think we've been driving to an hour away to church to continue where we were going when we were in San Diego. But I just wondered, is that okay that we're not supporting in the diocese in which we live?
Well, it's not ideal, and I can recommend something better for you that would prevent you from having to do that. But sometimes if you're in a situation where it's intolerable, according to the church's law, you have the right, you have the freedom to even register at a parish that's not your territorial parish. It used to be that you had to be registered in the parish within whose boundaries you resided, but that's no longer the case. So you could, if you chose to do so, register at a different parish. When I say it's not ideal, what I mean by that is you are part of the local church and the local church needs you. And so not just your local church in the diocese, but also the local church in your parish. But if because of antics and misbehavior and things, it just becomes impossible or intolerable, you do have that right. So what I would suggest is you could go a very short distance to the Mission San Juan Capistrano, where they have the traditional Mass in the Sarah Chapel. And it's beautiful and traditional and lovely. It's a great parish in any case. And if you've never been to the Basilica there, the new one, it's glorious. And to go to Mass there is glorious. So that's just a hop, skip, and a jump from where you are. So that's just a hop, skip, and a jump from where you are if you wanted to go to the traditional Mass. Also, there are parishes that are run by the Norbertine Fathers. You know, I'm a big fan of theirs. So in Costa Mesa, you have St. John the Baptist. And I know there are others. They've recently taken charge of some other parishes entrusted to them by the bishop. But you could get in touch with St. Michael's Abbey if you wanted to find out which parishes those are. And that would keep you in your diocese, which would be a good step in the right direction. I hope that helps, Karen. Thank you. Let's go to Steve in Riverside. Good morning, Steve.
Hi there. I just wanted to quickly ask your thoughts. I love, your wisdom and everything and what you bring forth to the church. You know, it does sound so logical, but I wanted to ask, whenever you bring up the church fathers, do you believe this can be taken in the way of, say, how the Jews in Jesus's day would kind of view their spirituality in relation to Moses? Do you believe this could be seen as kind of the modern day equivalent of, well, we have St. Ignatius of Antioch for our father, so therefore, this is the true faith? What are your thoughts?
I think the answer is yes, you can and even should invoke the fathers of the church as monuments of tradition, monuments of the gospel that was transmitted both orally and in the scriptures. and the church fathers would be the, you know, the men who faithfully, authentically transmitted the gospel through their era and it comes down to us. It's also important to invoke the church fathers as the witnesses that they provide us with a testimony as to how the gospel was understood in the early church. So I wouldn't draw a comparison between citing the church fathers and the Pharisees invoking the traditions that Jesus condemned, because after all, the traditions that Jesus condemned in Matthew chapter 15 and Mark chapter 7, for example, were not traditions that came from Moses or Abraham. They were traditions that the scribes and Pharisees concocted themselves. And furthermore, and maybe this is might be the crux of the question here, is that Jesus rebukes them for invoking Moses and Abraham precisely because they thought they were saved because they were in the lineage of Abraham, that was sufficient, and that for them to be righteous and have this special standing was enough for them. They could be hard-hearted, they could be hypocrites, and all the things that the Lord condemns them for being in Matthew chapter 23. His point to them about invoking Abraham as our father is that that's not going to save you. But when we invoke the church fathers, we're not doing it on that basis. We're not saying, well, we're saved or we're the one true church because of the church fathers. No, we would say that the testimony of the fathers is evidence that the Catholic Church is perpetuated from the very beginning to the present day. So our invocation of the church fathers is for an entirely different reason. I can see the sort of, you know, at first glance kind of comparison, but as you go deeper, you see, for those reasons, that invoking the church fathers really isn't the same thing as what the scribes and Pharisees did. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's fairly stated. In fact, you'd called out some of the Protestant brethren and sisters as well, as far as, you know, how some of them actually, and I didn't even know this, that some of them actually believe they too have kind of a lineage back. In fact, some of their confessional documents, like if you're looking at the Lutheran confessions, mm-hmm. they actually try and quote the church fathers. And so I find it interesting when people use that. So clearly, I think there's wisdom in doing that. I just, mm-hmm. you know, I wanted to see your thoughts on it.
Those are my thoughts. And this is a world that I've inhabited for a long time, you know, the better part of 40 years now. And I'm familiar with what you're referring to, Steve. I've seen it before where certain Protestant folks will try to make St. Augustine a Calvinist, which is laughable, or they try to invoke the authority of a given church father to harness him to their Protestant view of things. And as soon as you start looking at the totality of what a given church father has to say, you have to abandon that project because these men were not Protestants. They certainly were not Calvinists or Lutherans or non-denominational guys. They were Catholic through and through, capital C Catholic. And that's where it seems to me that a study of the early church fathers is among the very best things any Protestant can do if he wants to know the truth about the Catholic Church, like John Henry Newman did. He was vehemently anti-Catholic in his Anglican Protestant days. And so he wanted to disprove the Catholic Church's claim to being the one true church. So he started studying the church fathers, and he was so exasperated that eventually he just gave up and he became Catholic. And he has a famous line. He says, to become deep in history is to cease to be Protestant, which is what he himself had just done because he couldn't explain it away. He couldn't argue against the vast evidence that the early church was thoroughly Catholic in a capital C sense. So he had the intellectual honesty to become Catholic. And it wasn't easy, as you can imagine. But yeah, I would say in short form, there's great value in reading the church fathers because of their testimony to this fact of the early church. Anything more you want to add, Steve?
No, I'm just, you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I've been learning about, you know, Protestantism because it came to my conclusion, you know, I went through the conversion process with RCIA. I really had no, that was almost 10 years ago. I had no idea about Protestantism as far as what they actually held. And so it's interesting. I remember one time, like there was a guy who called in and he was freaked out. You might remember it was like four years ago or something. Heaven help me. Okay. He called your show and he was terrified because of something Pope Francis did. And then all of a sudden he starts going, what if Pope Francis is the Antichrist? And I'm thinking this guy is crazy, because even though I'm getting scandalized by what some of the stuff Francis was doing during that time, I never thought he was the Antichrist. I'm like, where is he getting this? And I had no idea that, like, Protestants, some of them anyway, held that that office of the papacy has, you know, elements of, you know, that I don't want to say it, but you know what I'm trying to say. I had, like, and so it's just interesting to learn about the history.
Yeah, there is. I wrote a book, for what it's worth, called Pope Fiction, Answers to 30 Myths and Misconceptions About the Papacy. And if you're interested in digging deeper, that's something that I offered, Pope Fiction. One of the things I found is that many people who are scandalized, many people who are up in arms, in some cases, not all, they make the category mistake of assuming that this somehow disproves the Catholic teaching on papal infallibility, and it does not. But it's a nuanced issue that at first glance, some people misread it. So in this book, what I try to do is to demonstrate the bedrock teaching in such a way that we can make sense out of some of the things that we see. And then lastly, Steve, if you're looking for another good book, this is called The Divine Primacy of the Bishop of Rome and Modern Eastern Orthodoxy by James Lacutis. It's an excellent work of patristic testimony from the early church, talking about that topic and many others. So appreciate the call. Thank you. I'll be back with hour three in just a moment, so please don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.